Hi, I am Chili Salazar from Speakeasy, and I'm a co-founder.
And I am Daniel Salazar. I am the CEO and also a co-founder of Speakeasy. And we are building this incredible app that allows its users to support each other. They support each other in three authentic ways: a peer nomination for support, a automated nomination for support, and a self nomination for support. And this gives our users the tools to deploy support and empathy to their loved ones and themselves.
I like that. A very nice, clean, get to the point. I like that a lot. I am a sucker for a good pitch. This is why I let people get in there, I go, just tell me what you do. And sometimes people are like, I go, I don't know. And I'm like, but when someone gives a nice, seamless pitch, I'm like, beautiful. All right, so we're gonna get to the business in a few. We're here for a while. So just get comfortable. We're here for a while. I started this podcast now coming close to 2 years ago because small businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators are not able to have a forum to tell their story in a large on a larger platform, meaning that you probably get like 5 or 10 minutes on a news channel, something like that, if you are new, if you're in trouble, or if it's a political year. And so I wanted to actually give a place where small businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators, startups could be in a place where they can talk about their product. But before we talk about the product, I always tell people there are human beings that are creating these wonderful things. So I know Chili because Chili and I met, God, like it was like probably it was in 2016 we met, because it was a place that I was working that I don't talk about because I didn't like where I was working. But we met in 2016, and I was just wowed by you. And like I was brought in by one of your colleagues, and you came into the meeting, and I was just totally wowed by you. The energy, the excitement, the go, 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 go. It was like insane to me. And I'm like, oh my God, someone's gonna compete against me against energy? What? What is going on here? I'm known for my energy. And I was like, I walked away thinking, oh, I'm tired. I'm so tired. She's like a lot. She's a lot and a good a lot, which is great. And so we've kept in touch the entire time, and we give each other accolades virtually all the time because we are both trying to do so many things to change the world. So that's how we know each other. But I want to rewind all the way back. So for both of you guys, I want the long stories. So I want to hear from where you guys are from, where are you guys at now, all the way to the point where you guys met each other. So each of you guys telling your story up to the point where you met each other. And I may interrupt if I hear something, but I just want you to know that. So I don't know who wants to go first, but share your story of who you are, where you came from, your background, your education, to the point where you met each other.
Oh boy. Okay. My background, we could be here for days. So I will, even though you asked for the long version, I will semi-condense mine, because there's also two of us. I had a traditional, I guess, childhood, but what is normal these days anyway, right? But I was born here in the United States, but my family, my roots are from China and Hong Kong. That's where my parents are from. But I was born here, and shortly after, I actually was shipped back to Hong Kong to be raised by my extended family, my grandparents, while my parents were working hard trying to, establish themselves in the States and establish a future for our family. So fast forward.
Wait, can I just tell you right now? Okay, so this is one of those things like this. Usually, I don't like it's usually the Barbara, Oprah, and me gets people crying later on. Like it's usually later on in the conversation. I go,
You get
dude,
me every time, Jody. You get me every time.
we haven't even been this like 30 seconds yet. You're already in tears. I go, we have to wait for this. We have to wait
Second
for this.
question. Second question.
What can I say? You're really great at peeling onions. And
but for anyone that's listening, my full authentic self. I know,
and
but for anyone that's listening, I am not like this with everyone. But for everyone else that's listening, they're like, I go, she didn't even say anything. Now people are going to be afraid of me and thinking, holy crap, she has this jujus on these people where they just start to cry and she doesn't even say anything. Although that's a really cool superpower, I'm not going to lie to you.
You've got a powerful effect.
Well, all right. I'm going to sit there and go back. So how was it for you where you were born? All right, so you were born in Massachusetts? Where in the United States were you born? I'm assuming Massachusetts?
Connecticut. Just over the border, close enough.
So you were born in Connecticut. How old were you when you went back to Hong Kong?
That's a great question. I was a toddler. I was a toddler because I remember it. So in Hong Kong, kids start school earlier. And I remember my version of preschool in Hong Kong when I was maybe 3, 4 years old at best, is having to sit down and copy Chinese characters, like learning how to write in Chinese and repeating lines on like a grid piece of paper 100 times. That's all I remember from that was early education, nursery school in Hong Kong. And I do also remember coming back to the States when I was old enough to start kindergarten.
Okay. So you weren't there that long?
Not that long, but you know, having studied child development and brain development, those, you know, short but most formative years was spent in Hong Kong away from my parents. And recalling, spotty memories, but recalling the ride home from the airport when I was introduced to my parents face to face for the first time, and then getting in the car to go home, which, what did home mean? nothing made sense. And boy, a match starting kindergarten, not knowing a word of English, not even being able to communicate to my teachers about needing to go to the restroom and having a set of extra clothes in the classroom because, there definitely, I think, were times where communication did not go so smoothly. And that was, those were the experiences that I had to navigate. I went to elementary school in West Hartford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I can't recall anybody else that looked like me. So I think those experiences and, of course, at the time, not necessarily realizing it, but it wasn't until later on in life when I found myself in college studying to be in nursing school, actually. Mm-hmm. I was in nursing school thinking that that was my track to become a doctor, which—
Because you know, honestly, the rule of thumb for any international kid, first gen, doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Yes. Those are the jobs. I'm glad you said it and not me, because that's the thing, right? Especially if you're an Asian, that sort of was the path written.
So you know, it's not just Asian, I'm Haitian, and it's all of us. And like, there's not one international friend that I have that we weren't told those are the only three that the parents want. If we're working hard to come to the States, those are the three jobs. So if you go off that grid, they're like, whenever the relatives say, how is she? She's happy. And that's all they can say. She's so just so you know, it's not just you, it's all of us.
Wow, that makes me feel a little better.
Okay, wait. I'm gonna pause for a bit. So all right, so we're in college. So we're gonna pause before we get to like your degree. So Danny, where are you from? Like, what's your story up to college?
Okay, so I was originally born in Salt Lake City, Utah, 1978. Mm-hmm. My parents kept me there for a few months. My father's family was from Denver, Colorado. So we had a support system there. So we moved there shortly after. I don't remember, you know, any of the Salt Lake City times. I definitely remember the Denver times. I love Denver. You know, like Chile, I also had a very tight relationship with my grandparents. You know, the kind that it was a similar thing. You know, it was a similar thing where I was around them a lot and, you know, just learned so many great lessons. And they were really, you know, outliers. They grew up, my father and his brother grew up in a really affluent neighborhood in Denver. And we were the only Latinos in that area. My grandmother was well known. She worked for the state, and my grandfather, very hardworking. And we all, you know, they were just pillars of our family. And those were great times. Up until I was about 6 years old, and ultimately my parents' relationship ended. They got a divorce, and my mother ended up, you know, there were a few years. My mom was working at the Denver Art Museum. My dad, an entrepreneur. A couple great years. And then my mom ended up moving up to Orcas Island, Washington, in Puget Sound, in between Seattle and Vancouver, British Columbia. And so I moved with her. And that was an interesting time. You know, I went from having this great support system to being lonely a lot and really starting to bout with loneliness, you know, really yearning for family and connection.
Mm-hmm. How old were you at that point?
I moved up to Orcas when I was about eight years old, mischievous, impulsive, insecure. And then during that time, my father remarried and started a new family, and he moved to the East Coast, to the Boston area. Ended up settling in Scituate, Massachusetts. But in between that, I went back and forth a lot. And like I alluded to earlier, I got in some trouble and I made some bad choices and ended up really needing a great place to go to high school. And my dad was living in Scituate, Massachusetts. They had just moved there, and it was incredible. Mid-90s, six beaches. Had gone through some tough times when I didn't have any friends, and I ended up being really nervous about Scituate. Scituate is even though it has six beaches, it's a tough place. You know, it's a tough place, meaning the people there are hardworking, prideful. It was a great environment. And the community embraced me. I had always leaned on athletics. You know, when I was lonely, I would always go shoot hoops or, you know, play football with friends. And Scituate had these opportunities for me where I met mentors, and the best friends in my life still are from there. I ended up having a great high school experience with my, you know, living with my dad and his family. I have two great sisters and three great brothers. And, you know, when high school wrapped up, I ended up going to a small state college, now Westfield State University. And at that point, it was Westfield State College. Once I graduated, I started in education. I became a teacher.
Pause. Well, we're going to pause. Okay. So we're both at pausing at college here. So I have good friends that live in Washington and Seattle, Moses Lake, which Moses Lake, small town as well out there in Washington State. What a big change you went from three major location changes where the world of Colorado, I mean, Utah, you didn't remember, but Colorado, it's a whole different vibe. And then you go to Washington State, where again, dramatically, I'm jealous because you got to see the orcas. I'm jealous. It's on my bucket list. That's like it's a beautiful, I mean, in regards to the environment and stuff like that, it's like two Colorado and we'll call Washington State, or like so environmental. People are like, you know, really outdoorsy, but again, still dramatic in regards of the culture. And then coming to Massachusetts, where we're tough. I mean, I'm sure you knew the second you got here, we're tough. And if we like you, we'll tell you, but you got to give us time to like you. And once we like you just said, we'll bring you in, but we'll test you to make sure, because if you break that trust, we're taking you down. So how was it for you? You guys know. So how is it for you to go to, I mean, three different, I mean, God, Tilly, you were in New England. I mean, look, Connecticut, look, Hong Kong to New England to here. So that's another culture thing. So the two of you guys, we'll call it diverse ethnicity, different points of the country. How the hell did you even adapt? I mean, the loneliness was one thing, but education, the people, finding community, keeping up with your family, like how the hell did the both of you guys figure out your place within all these different locations?
Go ahead, you go first.
Well, I think I have to say, I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, I don't even know how old I am. I'm almost 44. And I feel like it's a journey. It's a journey because there are so many complexities and it bubbles up at different times and moments in your life. And so I'm constantly reminded. I feel like the older I get, the more cognizant I am of pausing at moments and realizing that it's somehow linked to all of these different experiences in terms of the way I'm thinking about something, the way I'm responding about something, the way that I am choosing to do or not do something. And so I find myself questioning myself more and reflecting more on it, but I haven't figured it all out yet. That's my answer.
It's a good answer. I like that answer. It's a good answer.
Yeah, very honest, very honest. For me, I think what came to my mind initially when you asked the question is that I was lucky that two of the three places really were incredible support systems. It made it easy, you know, and it's one of those things. Now I'm also almost 44 years old. I'm just starting to realize that, you know, these things that were so traumatic for me actually were necessary. You know, the adversity is necessary to have a perspective. So even though, you know, I left such a supportive place and, you know, a really happy childhood to then deal with being lonely. And just for the record, my mom is my everything. You know, she's unbelievable and she was working her butt off, but it was more the nature of her being the sole breadwinner and her needing to do everything, right? So that and then I'm on an island, right? So that was really hard, but I learned so much through the tough times. And then to be fortunate enough to move to Scituate, which is, I'm so proud of. And you mentioned kind of the initiation, right? And there's nothing I'm more proud of than to have passed that initiation. And my best friends, they aren't people that have come along the way. I've been fortunate enough, those guys, those people from those five, six people from high school, those are still, you know, those are the day ones, you know? So then to go from the tough loneliness to not being as lonely and finding self-esteem, and my high school basketball coach, an incredible man, incredible, incredible man. And the universe, you know, God, people call it different things, you know, I mean, what a blessing to have him come into my life at that time. And, you know, he was everything that I wanted to be. He embodied everything that I was hoping for. And, you know, he taught me how to use the game of basketball to leverage that. So I think that the answer to the question is that I was fortunate enough to see both ends of the spectrum, and two out of the three kind of sandwiched the tougher experience. So then I could have the experience after to kind of flourish in high school and after that. And really enjoy it and be grateful for it, because I knew the adversity I had faced prior.
I have to say that I always find it funny when people ask me, like, if you could change anything in your life, what would it be? And I'm like, nothing. Like, I wouldn't change anything because you wouldn't be the person you are now if you changed. And so people are so apt to change everything about them and not realizing you are who you are right now at this very given moment of time because of all of those things, good, bad, ugly, and different. And you need to embrace those. And so I love that you just said, like, that they all put them, you, they all your different perspectives really just like sandwiched together. And Chili, I love the fact that you were like, everything that you're thinking about now, where you are right now, is because of all the situations you've had in the past. And it helps you define, it helps you come up with more better decisions, better, smarter, wiser decisions. And I always put you two together is like exactly the way that I'm thinking, where everything that I've seen, I've done, I've said, I've experienced, I've seen, I've been taught are what comes out of my mouth right now. I mean, everything. And I would never want to take those moments away. So I love that. Okay. So now when you guys went to college, what were your degrees? What did you go to school for? And where and what point did you guys meet each other? So between school, what were your degrees, the point where you met each other?
This is going to be, we're entering the entertaining part of this.
We weren't being entertained before? What?
No, we have a very, I think, serendipitous, cool story.
It could really be a Lifetime movie.
Well, all right, then let us know.
Okay, so I went to college up in New Hampshire, Colby Sawyer, and I was, again, studying to be a nurse on a road path to become a pediatrician. Not my dream, not an origination of where my heart or mind was, but it was. That was my path at the time. Until actually the halfway point, I had already started doing my practicum at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, which was, you know, just, it was awesome on paper, right? It just, the notion of recognizing like it's really happening. I'm in a really great program and I'm doing this practicum and it's all, you know, I'm crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I'm a true believer that the universe, you know, ultimately has its say. And so the universe, I believe, intervened, which basically translated into me essentially having a breakdown halfway through college and realizing that that wasn't the path I wanted to continue down. And holy crap, how am I going to explain this to my Asian parents to say, sorry, but all the money that you've poured into, college thus far, and I'm so close, but I changed my mind. So that was really hard because I think the universe was trying to remind me that, you know, to your earlier question, I was still trying to sort out how my experiences thus far, how that translates into, you know, my calling. What am I meant to do? What should I really be pursuing and preparing myself as a person emotionally, mentally, you know, and just my whole self? And it was telling me to stop. And it was telling me to help myself better understand my past experiences and heal from some of those experiences. Maybe my calling is to do something to help others. And it was actually in the practicum where I realized when I really started to see a shift in healthcare in general, right? When nurses were, where it was really becoming more evident that money was driving patient care or the lack thereof, right? It wasn't, there was never enough time available to spend with a patient to really understand and hear them. It was just rush from patient to patient. And it was still meaningful work, but it wasn't the kind of work that I feel like where I could really connect with somebody. And I guess I was very fortunate in that the school I was attending also had a really great child development and early education program. And that was it. That was it, even though it meant, since it was two completely different tracks, I had to essentially start all over. I mean, none of my, you know, coursework the first, you know, 2.5 years translated at all. So it meant I essentially needed to start college all over again. But knowing that we could not afford another 4 years of college, I needed to, in order to explain this to my parents, I needed to figure out a way to squeeze 4 years of schooling into 2 years so that in the end, financially, it would all work out. And I did it as soon as, like, that break was also the beginning where, you know, I worked my tail off the last 2 years, switched my majors, and ended up getting my degree in child development, early education, minoring in child psychology. And that was fulfilling for me in so many different ways. And it just opened my eyes to, okay, helping others, especially helping young people, is the way that I'm going to be able to also help myself. So the degree was the first step. And then it was to figure out how specifically. Was it to be a teacher? Was it something else? And teaching seemed to be the natural next step. And so that leads to how we end up eventually meeting, because so I graduated and when I went home to Connecticut, I don't think I even fully unpacked all my things because I knew that I wasn't going to be staying long. You know, after spending 4 years in New Hampshire and having grown up in Connecticut, you know, you get antsy. And so I headed to Boston, as, you know, many fresh college grads do, and got my first apartment in Allston, which, I mean, which fresh college grad landing in Boston doesn't get?
And it's a good spot.
That's an apartment.
In all right, wait, I'm going to stop you for a quick second. So I just need to know, what was your parents' reactions when you're like, so I'm not going to stay in medical lane, I'm going to switch? Like, what was that conversation like? Because I know, like, I mean, I didn't even have to have the conversation with my parents because they could see the writing on the wall. Like, she's smart, but she's not going to be a doctor. I mean, they knew. I mean, the three, I mean, there was no way I was going to be any one of those three things. So they didn't even have to ask the question. They just knew. I just knew I had to go to college. I knew I had to get a job. I knew specific rules and I was abiding by the rules, but I didn't have to have that big, deep conversation. So what was it like for you to, you just, I mean, 2 years, a lot of money. And like, what did they say? That's what I'm saying. What did they say?
Yeah, honestly, I don't even remember what their reaction was. I honestly don't. So it's either that it went so horribly bad that I have blocked it out of my mind, or maybe I never directly told them until like it was too late. And by the way, you guys are coming up for graduation and you might not notice what degree I'm getting, but it's a degree. I mean, honestly, I don't.
I think it was the second one, probably.
I don't probably. Remember. I mean, I could have gone.
I love how you blanked it out. Like, I just don't recall.
Yeah, you would think, right? It's such a big, big thing, right? And you see in movies all the time, you know, kids freaking out thinking, oh my gosh, breaking this. And here I am. I honestly don't remember. It could have really gone horribly wrong and I have blocked it out, or I could have just, you know, subtly rolled with it. And, you know, here's another thing is, I think for better or worse, having immigrant parents,
you can get things sometimes. You can get things by on them. I know.
Okay, thank you. See, I don't even need to. I don't even need to speak the words, and you just know.
Well, you know why? No, all right. So I took care of my grandmother for 21 years, and I swear to God, it was literally so easy to take care of her because she didn't speak the language. So I got to do whatevers. Now, mind you, this is the same kid that when I was younger, we went to Catholic school and I got good grades. I mean, I just say that I have got good grades because my parents kept all my report cards. So I'm like, I go, oh, look, I got good grades. Look at that. But one grade that I never got good at was I got an F for conduct. Miss Charles needs to control her mouth. Danny, I know it's a shocker for you. Chili, not a shocker for you at all. I got Fs all the time because I couldn't stop talking. Now, I was afraid of my parents. Like I go, like most little international kids, we're afraid of our parents. And so when I'm coming home, I'm trying to hide the report card comes in the mail, you're trying to do anything. And so I told my parents that F meant fabulous. So my parents believed it. Oh yeah, my parents believed it until, cause you only get bagged by your own kind. So we were in Catholic school and my mom was so proud, Jody got an F for fabulous. And she told another Haitian parent and one of the Haitian, this Haitian parent is one of the Haitian yayas in our lives. And literally, I remember Mona said, she goes, oh no, F does not mean fabulous. And when I tell you, yes, I'm going to say it, got the beating of my life. Cause like the belt came out. My parents were like, what, you lied? And it was like, holy crap. And everyone's like, how the hell? I'm like, international parents, you can get away with anything until you get caught. So.
That story was so good. That unbelievable story. I love that story.
Oh, Danny, when we go out for drinks, there's so many more of those stories that I have. Literally my mother would sit there and say like, you come up with stories. I go, I took pictures because I take pictures of everything. So no, I have proof. I'm not lying. I got proof.
Receipts. But anyway,
that's going to be our date night when we all three of us go out. Okay. So we'll call it Danny. Now up to the college part. You.
Oh, okay. I think I mentioned earlier, I went to Westfield State, now a university, then a college, and it was awesome. A lot of situations. I was a movement science major with a specificity in physical education.
Okay.
So I was studying, you know, human anatomy, biology, but also, teacher type courses, you know, management and curriculum and learn how to write lessons and curriculum. And really, I my first year in college, I played basketball and it just seemed logical. And I had mentioned my mentor before, my high school basketball coach, Coach Quam. And, you know, he seemed super happy, you know, being a teacher and a high school coach. And I thought that would be a really cool thing to go after at the time. And I did. So I went to Westfield State and played basketball for the 1 year and made some great friends. And, you know, it was an awesome experience. So yeah, that's where I went. And I keep thinking like, okay, stop now. So was that, I should stop now, right? Stop.
No,
I just want to. I know how you're doing it. You're trying to like get it so they come together at the right time. So
That was my
college experience.
So that was your college experience. But what, all right. So now, like without me having to tell you, how did you guys meet?
Okay. So this story is really good. This is really good. So I was living in South Boston at the time. And I found out that Machilia was too. I was teaching in Cambridge at the high school, Cambridge Region Latin High School, and coaching at North Cambridge Catholic, a small Catholic high school. They no longer exists. And Chili was the clubhouse director of the Cambridge Boys and Girls Club. I came to learn this on a platform you might know called MySpace.
Back in the day, so, MySpace, what?
MySpace, Tom, you know, yeah. My original friend, you know, but anyway, so it was a time living in Southie, you know, I was teaching and coaching, but it was really a bachelor lifestyle. A lot of my buddies in and out the house, you know, I was living with some buddies in South Boston. And at the time, you know, I guess dating or talking online was not as socially acceptable. You know, my friends used to say some funny things about what they thought about it. And they say, what are you doing? You know, and so anyway, I was on MySpace, and all of a sudden I'm investigating it, and I look, and there's this picture of this beautiful, you know, human, and it says Chile under it, Chile. And they're all like, no, you know, this person doesn't exist. Like, what are you thinking? Like, you know, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. You know, it's worth giving it a shot. So we talked, you know, back and forth for about a month. We were both very busy.
Well, let me just interject.
No, yeah, you go.
So I had just created an account on MySpace because I was, part of the planning committee for our high school reunion. I think it was, I don't remember which reunion, but we were trying to plan a high school reunion, and this new platform called MySpace was a new thing. And so somebody said, oh, that would be a great tool to use to try to find all of our classmates. And so I really wasn't clear on how MySpace worked when one day I received a message from this person. Hello, would you like to be my friend? And mind you, you know, I'm a huge fan of like 2020 and, you know, murder mysteries. So of course my initial response is, who are you? How did you get my contact information? Are you a stalker? You can go.
You realize every stalker out there is going to say, by the way, I'm a stalker.
I wanted to let them know I'm not afraid to call you out if indeed you are. And if you are, I'm going to find out.
No, she did like a month of vetting. You know, she would like, we'd have conversations and that sort of thing. So, so about after a month, it came time to meet in person. And I have a favorite place in Boston, a place I just love. It's called Lucky's Lounge in South Boston. I don't know if you
know. I know it well. I know it very well.
Yeah. Okay. So it's on the corner of Congress and A, and it's just, you know, I was a basketball coach at the time. So win or lose, I would always go there and get a meal and a drink after. And, you know, it was just, it was a great place. And so we decided to meet there. And, you know, at the time, mind you, I was thinking 50-50 at best, this person's real. And, you know, it was a Friday night, and I think we had just won. And I think back then I didn't win much as a coach. It was early on. So, and like I said, a lot of me and my childhood friends would be in the place. So Friday nights was like, okay, let's all hang out at my place in Southie. And so, you know, a couple hours go by after the game, and I say, oh, I realize, you know, I'm super late for this date I'm supposed to be on. So I go, I leave, and then a couple of my buddies hop in the car with me, and they say, you know, we're coming too. I said, I'm going on a date. Like, I'm going on a date.
Wait. You say super
right,
late?
I know, right?
Super, I heard nothing but super late. Like, how late were you?
I think, I don't know how long, she'll remember better than me. I was like an hour late?
Almost an hour. It was probably at least 45 minutes. And I was already sitting in my car ready to like put it in drive.
That's a bad form, dude. Come on.
It was not a good look. I'll be the first to admit that. It only gets worse until it gets better. So I came down the stairs. You know, I parked on the bridge. I came down the stairs, and she was under the underpass in the car. And I looked, and it was her. And I'm like, wait, this person exists? Like, this beautiful human being that's named Chile, like the country. Like, I was like, wow. And she's looking at me like I'm crazy, right? And I'm like, she's like, hi, I'm Chile. And I was just like, tell you about. I'm like, oh, I'm Danny, you know, all this. Do you want to go in? And she's like huffing and puffing, like, this guy can't be serious. That being said, we get into the bar and
wait. What did you say to convince her to get out of the car? Because she's now clearly pissed off at you.
I don't know. You would have to ask her that. I honestly don't remember. Do you remember what I might have said?
I don't, because I really was so annoyed.
She's still annoyed.
I'm still, yes.
We spent our 10-year wedding anniversary. She's still annoyed.
I'm still annoyed, but it's like
the emotion is still there.
Well, this all goes, it all goes to like this weird thing about the universe. I mean, some people might think I'm completely loopy, but when you hear the coincidences, I mean, I think the universe forced me to go into this bar and just hear him out, even though not only was he late, but he shows up with an entourage of people. I mean, who shows up the first time they're meeting someone with a whole group of people? It just was like all the check boxes of all the no's, not the yeses, but like all the no's. But somehow, you know, somehow we continue to proceed. And the next thing you know, so we continue to correspond and hang out.
Wait,
I want to
furry person?
No, not yet. you gotta lead up to it. The bar, it wasn't a good rapport. And that was my fault as well. I think I was distracted.
So now she's in the bar and still going bad?
It's so bad.
Oh, yeah.
So bad. You know, and at the time, I don't know, I was single and dumb, you know, and it just didn't click right away that, like, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. Like, you just hit the lottery. It's like, I scratched a ticket. I was like, it's a fake ticket or something. You know, it was like, I don't know what was wrong with me. It was a mistake. But like we talked about mistakes earlier, it led to some great stuff. So yeah, we didn't really interact in the bar, to be honest. And I think by the end of the night, she was so fed up. And I forget exactly how it went down, but I think she was driving me, or I was driving her, and she's not happy. And I'm thinking, okay, this is the last person. Last time I'll ever see this person. And I said, well, where do you live? What's your address? Where in Southie do you live? And she said, well, I live on 4A Mercer Street. And I just, my jaw dropped. Like you, I'm rarely at a loss for words. And I was like, whoa. I said, she starts to describe the apartment. She gives me specifics. I said, I had just moved out of that apartment.
No. I think
4 months prior. Yeah, 4 months prior, I had just moved out of that apartment. And I drive her up, and, you know, it's like, that's the serendipitous part, was she was living there. She was living in the same place. And at the end of when I was living there, I had two roommates, and they ended up moving out for different reasons. I talk about lonely, right? I'm living in this Southie apartment, three floors all alone. I ended up moving to another part of town with a friend that I grew up with, to his parents' place. They own the place. And she was living there. She was the next person to move in there. So her landlord was like, what's going on? And he goes up to her and he says, you know, listen, there's an old resident. Like, he's lurking around. We're worried about him. She's like, no, that's my boyfriend, Danny. guy couldn't believe it. But then it did click that, hey, you did just hit the lottery. This incredible human, you know, you have an opportunity to spend some time with this incredible human. And that's when my life really changed for the best. I'll just leave it there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But let me just fill in a couple of things. I mean, okay, first, right. I mean, if you think about how many little streets, how many different apartments there are in Southie, of all the apartments, what is the likelihood that we both end up living in the same exact apartment, just at different times?
Well, just so for people that are listening, Boston, the way that Boston is designed, the houses are literally on top of each other. And so the Alston area, where so Massachusetts has over 215 university colleges and trade schools, give or take numbers. And in the Alston area is where all the college students live, because they just, I mean, literally landlords compact all these buildings, and they're like, I mean, it could be slumlords, but these kids will like live in all different floors. So many kids packed in. They don't take care of the buildings, but it is what it is in Southie and Alston areas like that. And so being in those areas, to be in the same exact apartment is the probability of that is like literally low, like extremely low, because of all the apartments in that given area that they're all compacted the same. But the probability is really, really, really beyond low.
Exactly. And on top of that, so, you know, in the meantime, you know, as we're just like getting to know one another, I'm trying to also pull information from him so I could do my undercover sleuthing on the side. And so a couple of other things uncovered. First, which I do give my brother-in-law credit, is, you know, realizing that Danny actually went to the same school and was like studying in the same major as my brother-in-law, but the two of them and my sister all went on spring break together previously. So he had already met my sister.
Without you.
During college, without.
Yeah, years before, maybe 10 years before, about 10 years before.
So it was like a weird, you know, I don't know what you call it.
Coincidence.
And what was the other piece? I mean, and so
drove a Mazda 6.
We were seniors in high school, again, before we knew each other existed. You were in college? Mm-hmm. I drove mine in high school. But anyway, we both drove red Mazda 626s.
Which is probably the least...
So I have to sit there and say the apartment comes number one. Your siblings knowing each other, and then comes the car.
And just like the first date, like it took me a while to get my bearings about it, because when she first approached me about it, she said, "Do you know?" And his name's Steve. She said, "So, you know, do you know Steve?" And she gave me the last name. You know, I could say last name, right? Don't matter. Steve Menard, and he. I don't know why I said this, but I said, I don't know who that is. You know, it'd been like 10 years. I said, it just didn't register. And, you know, so after she had asked me that question, you know, she was like, this is really weird. And she went back to Steve and she's like, you know, there's this guy and I think I like him, but I'm not sure. And she was actually considering, you know, going in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I was still, you know, single. I was in Providence for the weekend with my best friend, and she called me and she said, "Why did you tell me you didn't know Steve Menard?" And I said, "I know him. That's my guy, you know." And she's just like, and actually, I didn't know till years later. She had said to him, "You know, I think I'm gonna break up with this guy." And he had vouched for me. And he had said, "No, Danny's a good guy. You know, he talks a lot. He's a talker, but he is a good guy. You consider getting to know him a little more." So you know, and that's also serendipitous, right? Like I'm doing the opposite things. I'm like not paying attention. I'm not even acknowledging someone we both know really well. And he goes to bat for me, and you know, we've been hanging out ever since, I guess.
Choose your friends wisely. That's the end of the story there. Choose your friends wisely, because they will vouch for you. All right. I'm gonna rewind the clock for a little bit. You guys meet. How long before you guys get married?
Well, here's chapter two. So we're dating, we're still living in Southie, and Danny's coaching this basketball team. And one day after practice, he stops by my apartment, and I was also living with just some roommates. So, and so he says he has one of his players with him and says, you know, can he stay with you for a little while? I got to go, but I'll explain later, but can he stay with you? So I didn't know what a little while meant. Could be a couple hours, could be a day, not like weeks, months, whatever. So I think when he When he...
You can't write notes. What is this? You're writing notes to her during an interview? What is this all about? How bizarre is that?
Was it bizarre? I just don't know where she's gonna go. I just don't know where she's gonna go. I didn't know where she's gonna go.
He's just let me say. Okay. So there's relevancy to this. So you know, here's Danny, who you know is not just a coach on the court but off the court too. You know. Saw that one of his players was in a situation and needed support, didn't quite know yet, you know, what that entailed. But, you know, fast forward, you know, it wasn't just a couple hours or a couple days. You know, one of his players really was in a situation where we had the ability to respond and help. And that really fast-tracked our relationship because we ended up then finding an apartment in Dorchester to get together so that we could give this player a bedroom of his own. We were just dating and living in separate apartments, like trying to figure out.
But she was living in my old apartment, so you know.
Well, regardless, we were still just trying to figure out our own lives, like how to, you know, what does adulting mean, you know, how to really start living on our own. Like that was where we were in our lives. Now, all of a sudden, there's a 17-year-old that is living with us and we're trying to navigate providing, you know, guidance and support as we're trying to build and figure out our own lives separately as well as together. And as you know, as much as it brought on its own complete set of experiences and challenges, because we were still babies. We really had no idea what we were doing, and we have a 17-year-old that we're now, you know, committed to and responsible for. But that really helped, I think, fast track my deep respect and admiration for the type of person that Danny is, to see the situation and run to it head on, you know, not necessarily with knowing the solution, but at least wanting to try. And so I think that leads to how we ended up engaged and married.
Yeah, and I'd like to say to that, you know, when I said that my life changed for the better, Machilia, it's very clear that her life is about service. And she gave a little background to that. You know, it's really her calling. Mm-hmm. And she is incredible at it. And I knew that if I was going to be with her, that's what our lives were going to be about. So, that's how we live. A lot of people don't get to see that side of Machilia. They don't get to see that how selfless she is and how, I don't know if selfless, how much work she does to help people. I think that's the better way to say it. And never wants credit, but it's her fuel. You know, that's her fuel and that's her calling. And you know, thousands of people she's helped, you know, not just that one player, but there's been thousands of people. And, you know, that's how we try to live our lives is through service of different ways. And I think that was a great example of that. But knowing that was, I mean, for her, it's truly a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's a lifestyle of service. It's not just her job. You know, her day job, I shouldn't call her day job because she works so hard. You know, she works so hard. It's not just during the day. It's all the time, whatever it takes, with a smile on her face. And that's been the biggest blessing because that's the foundation of our family. And I think that was kind of the beginning of it.
That opens the door to the business. Mind you, there's going to be many more things I want to ask in between, but what is the business? Why now? What does it do?
So the business is, if on the technical side, it is a tech business. It is, it's a corporation where we have been building a product, an application where we give the users the ability to support each other in an authentic way. Now, let me talk a little bit about what that means. What that means is that we have a lot of familiar features, a lot of great features that people enjoy. So things like video conferencing, especially over this span of time, has become much more relevant in the norm. Things like direct messaging, things like a library wall, which is almost like a group text, a group messaging forum, if you will. And these are things that are very familiar and things that everybody does on a daily basis for the most part. But what I'm most excited about, what we're most excited about, is the proprietary features that the app has. And I mentioned them earlier. I'm going to go into a little bit about each one. The first one is peer nomination for support. And what does that mean? It means that, so I'll just give you a real life example. 2 days ago, we had to take our dog to the emergency, you know, going through some tough times. She's older. So we've been testing the app for a long time now, just trying to improve it every day, trying to make it what, you know, try to get to the dream, get to the vision. And I knew she was going through a tough time. So in her cell on the user interface on the screen, there's a heart in the top left corner, and I simply pressed that heart, and it prompted a message that said, are you nominating Michilia for support? And I wrote something to everybody. I said, hey, listen, check in with her. You know, she's going through a tough time. I know she'd appreciate it. And once I press that nominate tab, it then goes to all the users within our private group to offer support in their own way. With boundaries. That was the original idea, and it's just exciting. It's exciting. It then led to some experiences with friends that I would worry about, friends who are suffering from different things, and they would ghost, right, on different forms of group text or whatever. They would ghost, and we'd be worried, you know, like, where are they? They wouldn't respond to messages. So we have an automatic nomination for support. And what that automatic nomination does, it's just an automated thing that if you're inactive for 7 days, messages go out to people in the group saying, this person's been active, maybe check in on this person, see what's going on with this person. We really like that one. We really like that one for someone who may have different problems or have different needs. The self-nomination was inspired during the pandemic. It was inspired during the pandemic because, like, my part of my history, which we spoke about, there was a lot of loneliness and isolation. And unfortunately, society's not in a place yet where we really accept mental health issues and people suffering from that. They're very misunderstood, and there's a stigma around. And I had a friend, and I won't say that friend's name, but, you know, I love him, and he's the kind of guy that is super successful, and on paper, you know, just really not lacking for anything, successful, people like him. But, you know, he lived alone, and he got on a message and told me and a couple friends, you know, I'm struggling. I need help. I'm lonely. I'm scared. So now we have a floating tab that's on every page, no matter where you are in the process of our application. I should say during the experience, any stage of the experience itself, and you can nominate yourself for support, and that'll go to all the users. You hit that floating icon and you can tell them exactly what's going on. I'll speak for myself, that empathy is a superpower. Mm-hmm. You know, be able to, and we're both empaths. We're both big time empaths. We take on other people's emotions and energy. But And I used to, you know, I used to get frustrated with how it felt being an empath. I used to feel like, oh man, I can barely orientate my own emotions. How am I going to deal with somebody else's? But once I realized it was a superpower, I got real hopeful because I'm an empath. And now, whether you're an empath or not, you know, no matter what type of person you are, you have the ability to support the people you love the most through nominating them. And we really believe that our nomination features within the app, those three features I just spoke about, they're going to be able to scale empathy on a level that no one could ever imagine. And we believe that it'll scale and deploy empathy the same way the like tab has on all different forums.
It's so funny that you just, platforms. So I love that you just brought that up because I have to add that whole entire concept of during the pandemic, more and more people moved away from their apps because it was just too much. The likes have been removed on a lot of these apps because it caused a lot more of the, especially with young girls, it caused a lot more angst, anxiety, bullying, literally self-worth. And so more of these apps, I mean, even there's still more and more, there are a lot more apps that are being developed in regard to self-care, mental awareness, talking to someone that you don't have to like go into someone's office. You can talk to someone so that way you can actually relieve, not relieve, but lessen the tensions that you're feeling right at this given moment. You are creating an app. I'm always back and forth on it where I'm fueled by the environment. Like the universe and me is, that's like, I go outside, I look out the window, I live by the ocean. I mean, I'm an island kid. I'm fueled by nature. Being with friends, etc. Going to the app, sometimes for me, it feels like I go, the thing that's causing a lot of this anxiety, you're driving people right to it. So what's the argument for you in regards of that? Because for me, I'm like, how do we get people away from these technologies and more talking and being with people or engaging with people? Like you had basketball, you had a coach. I mean, and Mukachuli, you're helping in all these different organizations, the Boys and Girls Club. But now people are like going towards the app, thus adding more to the loneliness. How are you combating, or what's your answer for that? I'm not even combating, but what is your answer for that? Because that is by far one of the biggest red flags for a lot of people, like screen time, da 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 da. Because that loneliness is being built up because I have my screen with me.
So I'm so glad you asked that, because that's just a great example of what motivates us. Is a lot of people feel that there is no place that you can go and feel a trust with an app. People come in skeptical. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big challenge for us because, you know, I'm not going to name any specific platforms, but a lot of platforms have lost trust.
Yeah.
And people don't feel good about going on there. Our goal ultimately is to create an environment that makes people feel good and then instead of feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the way that I think the difference is that there is no authentic connection there. Okay. With your example, with people being dependent on likes, right? Yeah. We are creating something where there is an authentic connection there, mm-hmm. where we are giving people the tools to connect in an authentic, organic, safe way.
Mm-hmm.
And I often ask people that, you know, just close your eyes, I'll tell people, and just imagine feeling that way going into an app. Just imagine not feeling the anxiety, not feeling the you know, being skeptical, we had the skepticism, but to feel good about that. You know, there was a point, this app, when we first started this company, it was actually a different concept, and I'll share it with you briefly. It was actually the opposite. We had it set up that you would nominate to get people evicted.
Wait, get people what?
Evicted from the app. Now, once again, it wasn't a winning concept. And ultimately, it's how we pivoted. And we pivot, it was a 180 pivot. But what it was almost like a reality show or whatever. If someone acts up in the app, now you have control and you can, you know, evict them from the group where they can't be part of the group anymore. And you put it's up
like
to
if,
a vote.
It's like if you were thinking about the gym, the gym that everything's purple. If anyone makes any loud noises, you automatically get like kicked out of the gym because the gym is like a safe zone. You're supposed to be like, you know, everyone's supposed to be work out. It's there for everyone, but no big, huge muscle heads, no like, like making noise. But the second you make, and they have a buzzard. And so if people get loud, they have a buzzard. And after a certain amount of time, you get kicked out.
Yeah. So, you know, that the, yeah, I never heard of
gym,
it.
So.
I never heard of that.
It's going to come to me. It's like, it's a very well-known gym. It's like, it's all purple. Their commercials are all the time. They're $99. I mean, it's like a very popular gym, but that's their biggest thing where the gym is for everyone, not just for the people that are going to make loud noises.
So, you go.
So my take on that question is, I don't think we're not against, and we also believe that face-to-face connection, face-to-face experiences with those that you care about is what keeps humans thriving and growing, right? We all need that sense of belonging. We need that sense of, you know, that you're accepted and you're supported. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that there's distance. There's the fact that all these other forces like work and life gets busy and creates all of these distractions. And so ultimately, even though the intention is often there for friends to get together or to take trips or to do whatever, hang out with family, mm-hmm. I think these days you find more times than not that it's, you know, all the intentions are there, but so many things get in the way, whether it's the time, whether it's the distractions, the money, the distance. You know, one very specific example that I think about where I really believe this can be, you know, one of those situations where, you know, the saying of, if you can't beat them, join them, right? I don't think we're close to getting billions of people to all of a sudden drop their apps. We need to encourage people to have more human connection. But until then, how do we use that for positive result benefits, knowing the negative results of how a lot of these platforms, what these platforms are causing, even though their marketing is all about bringing people together, but we see the statistics all the time of what it's doing, especially to a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a specific example is, you know, I have a dear friend that lived on the other side of the country, and she had been going through some personal challenges, was fortunate enough, and it took her a lot of time to find a support group that she would attend on a regular basis while she was living out there. But again, this thing called life, it happens, right? And so the next thing you know, she found herself moving across the country back to the East Coast.
Yeah.
Now with that, she had to leave this, you know, this physical group of people that she would engage with in person on a regular basis. Can you imagine how difficult it is, you know, to, you know, find that trust to begin with, to establish that group, and then not be able to physically attend those, you know, those meetings because you're now physically so far away. But with this tool, it gives people an ability to have that support network in an instant, and take away some of those pain points and gaps, you know, and that can easily be translated into the healthcare system and therapists, right? It costs money. And oftentimes it's great if you get to see a therapist, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you're lucky, insurance will cover like 20 weeks of visits, but then you're cut off. And if you're lucky enough to be able to afford it, great. But regardless, let's say you can mm-hmm. pay for the therapist. But what happens during the in-between time where you can't see your therapist yet? And so this can really be a powerful tool where if you have a set up safe space of important people in your network that you know you can safely nominate yourself to say, hey, I need to reach out. I need a voice. I need an ear.
But one would say, I have a phone. I have these phone apps. We have family groups on WhatsApp. We have groups on Facebook. You have all this noise out there, all these other things. Why would I want to use your app versus all these other apps? So that's like one of the things where so many people are starting their business. I mean, so I'll use, I'm just going to not use example, but I'm just going to put this into play where we see that there's like literally over 20 million people have left good paying jobs. They want to do something for themselves. They're not happy where they are. They're not being recognized. They're not seeing advancement. The pandemic realized where the micromanager was causing the problem. And now I don't have to see the micromanager anymore. And I'm at home. This is now my time. So all these factors, because of the pandemic, have come to like full front where I am trying to decide to do my own thing. You guys have selected this. Not only have you selected this big, huge behemoth to deal with, because mental care, now that it's in the forefront, is a behemoth. It is like so big because we've been hiding it. There's always been a stigma on it. So you've decided to take on this big, huge task. Your husband and wife working together, living together, doing an app together, creating this thing together. And you're dealing with the outside world where it's still a stigma. So stigma, there's so much people in this space coupled together, in behemoth of a problem of a situation. How are you taking all these different things and putting it together? Because there are people out there that are taking on big tasks like you because of the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, they were thinking this is the time. And then now you have this abundance of time that you took and you're using it wisely. And now the world is opening up and now you're like, wow, there's a lot of competition out there. What would you say to someone that is creating something with, whether it's friends or a spouse, and there's so much noise in the space. How did you find your place in a very large, noisy space?
No, great question. A lot to unpack there. I think to answer your first question, why would someone use our app when there's so many other apps, correct? Mm-hmm. I believe that was a question. And it goes back to what I started with, and that's the ability and the tools to support your people in an authentic way. And those features, those proprietary features, will supply those tools and that knowledge and that support for people. So our goal is to create, it's an optimistic goal. We want to create an environment that feels different, where people truly feel safe, where people truly feel supported. I think that, you know, people love comparisons. So I think that it's somewhere in the middle, right? It's somewhere in the middle of maybe some of these more well-known platforms, mm-hmm. and a group text between you and your college friends or you and your siblings, where you will reveal more private things and, you know, you have a safe environment. But now it's not just a safe environment. You have the tools to express empathy for the people you love the most. Mm-hmm. And it's one tap away. It's one tap away. And everybody in that group who loves you and supports you and spends the time and is invested in you can now support you. At the same time, you just talked about the overall, you called it a behemoth. Right. So that, like, just the size of the problem. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, you know, we live in service. And it's a problem that we believe is worth solving, addressing, helping to solve. Anything that we can do to help not only destigmatize, but give people the tools to recognize the importance of their mental health and then apply the self-care needed. Mm-hmm. I think also you had asked about the challenges of working together and being married and living together. I'll let Chili answer that.
Well, and also during a pandemic and you have a child.
Yes, yes, we do.
It's very peaceful in this house. Just imagine.
Yeah.
I think in short. But, you know, in thinking about, you're right. There's so much noise out there. There's so many distractions. There's so many, you know, other shiny things, new platforms, new. But at the end of the day, the problem still exists, right? Billions of people every day spend hours upon hours texting, you know, texting each other, doing video messaging with each other, engaging on other social networking apps. But corresponding data still shows us that we as a nation, we're spending billions of dollars in addressing mental health issues. And more, you know, even more important than that is the fact that we're losing lives. The loneliness epidemic is a thing that has no boundaries. It doesn't matter how, it doesn't care how much money you have or what, you know, what your circumstances are. I think what the pandemic has shown us is regardless of age, where you live, what your circumstances are, loneliness is a thing, and it can be really serious, and it can lead to other even more serious things, you know, whether it's making unhealthy choices to self, you know, find a way to self-cope because the social networking platforms that exist right now always, you know, are planting seeds that the grass is always greener on the other side. Look at everybody's lives.
Before you answer the question about how it is working together, to stay on this for a quick second, because I know I've taken way too much of your time already, and I have two more questions for you. But I'm a latchkey kid. I'm of the latchkey generation. I mean, my parents were in the house 24 hours, where my dad worked at night, my mom was during the day, so that way 24 hours a day they were in the house, and yet my dad worked at night, so he slept. So we were like on our own. We knew the food was ready for us. We had to get our homework done. We were latchkey kids, even though there's a human being in the house, we had to do our things on our own. When the pandemic was happening, and I talked to all my friends that we grew up with, we were all latchkey kids. I mean, you had the key around your neck, you got yourself home, you walked home, you knew how to like open the door, don't talk to strangers. You just knew, we were taught certain things. During the pandemic, people were calling, they're like, how are you doing? I go, I'm good. They're like, why? I go, I was a Haitian kid. I was not allowed to leave the house anyway. So I wasn't allowed to leave the house. I was supposed to be in my room. I can find things to do at any given time. I'm good. And I go, and I will, the phone Zoom. I mean, I'm constantly communicating with people. And you're of the generation of the technology really bolstered. I mean, and mind you, like we're a 10-year gap, but literally the technology really bolstered. I'm constantly fascinated and wondering, what is it really the technology that really made it where everyone was, because we were in front of TV sets growing up. Was it really that the bolstering of the technology that changed that whole entire concept of figuring out how to live and do things and just like entertain yourself? And the technology just drove the, I'm so lonely, I need to be with people. Because I see that all the time where I'm like, we weren't allowed to watch TV at certain times. Like there was a, there are no's, there are limitations. And now you're seeing this whole entire craziness of kids like obsessed with being on screen. I'm like, where are the parents? Where are the people saying no? Whether it's the parents, whether it's the teachers, whether it's the coaches, you were talking about your coach. You guys both talked about your grandparents. Where are all these people on this 9.5 billion people that we have on this planet? Where are the people that are guiding us? Because they were there before. They were there before. So what happened that now it's not even just the stigma of mental care. We've always had the called mental care situations, but now it's just like so much for everyone of all ages. What's going on? What are we missing that we need to fix right now? Not even talking about the app, but what do we need to fix to make society better? Because you two young people, that serendipity brought you guys together, opened your home to a young person in need without even thinking twice about it. Our house is always open. If you're an international person and you're visiting the States and you knew me, my parents would open the door like, come on and just stay at our house and we cook you a meal. What happened that there's a disconnect that people are just feeling lonely? The numbers are really high. People are on apps. People are committing suicide. You see this, so many young people taking their lives. What's going on? This is your world. I just want to get your thoughts of what that is. It's such a big answer, but I'm just curious because I'm watching all of these things and I'm scratching my head thinking, what are we doing to ourselves?
So I'll just do my best job answering that question. I think that loneliness can be misunderstood sometimes, or people look at it differently. What I mean by that is that people look at it very literal, that they're alone without other people physically around them. But what we know is that humans need connection, right? So loneliness, ultimately what that is, it's not being alone. It's not even being isolated. It's feeling alone. And sometimes when you hear people talk about loneliness, the worst bouts of loneliness come when they're around the most people, because there's almost a self-shaming or guilt aspect to it. Like, you're blessed. You should feel good. You have A, B, and C in your life. Why are you worried about D? But the way we're trying to shift our thinking and the way that we're trying to hopefully inspire people to shift their thinking is a more positive track, you know, and that's the self-talk somebody has. I mean, that's getting a totally different level, but we all have conversations with ourselves. And usually when those conversations are negative, it doesn't matter who's around you. It doesn't matter what your circumstances are. You're going to feel that way. And it's because of a lack of connection. That being said, that's kind of, how do I say it? That's kind of how things are. There's almost a pride in doing things on your own. There's almost a shame in asking for help. And that's the stigma that we truly want to fight. That's the shift in perspective that we truly want to help people find. And that is the motive behind the features in the app. Like when I talk about familiar features, those are things that people do every day before we thought of the concept of this app. What we're trying to do is put tools in the hands of people that are lonely, that the shift in consciousness goes from being ashamed asking for help to being proud and knowing how courageous you truly have to be to ask for help. Yeah. And everybody needs help, and it's okay not to be okay. And there's a lot of cliches I could say, and I agree with almost all of them, because people need connection. And I think that people feel lonelier than ever, to answer your question, because there's all these apps and there's more distractions and noise than ever, and they feel more disconnected than ever. So it's confusing. So not only are we trying to give them the tools, we're trying to help them feel peace and feel balance. And imagine going into an app and not being skeptical and feeling safe and knowing that your information isn't going to be shared and knowing that you have the ability to offer support to the people you love the most. And for us, it's the kind of mission, we have different kind of goals. You know, most corporations have very financially motivated goals, and it will take money to get us where we need to go. But our goals are different. Our goals are, how many people can we affect? You know, I spoke earlier, Machilia has affected thousands of people's lives in positive ways, I estimate. Yeah. Well, we feel that we can scale it to help millions of people, billions of people help themselves. And that's through creating this environment and giving people the tools to help each other and the people they love. And I can't thank you enough for giving us the opportunity to come and communicate that with you and your listeners.
Oh, no, I'm just happy that you guys are. I mean, again, I know Chili and I know what she does and who she, like, I know what she does and I know how many people she touches. I don't know when she sleeps, but people ask me the same exact thing. We're go, go, go. We are here to do as much as we possibly can. I mean, I was always taught that it is a sin to learn so much and then to die with that knowledge. And for me, I try to take everything that I, like, countries I've gone to, people I've met, I take all of that. And I started my career as a teacher and I give that back by teaching because I want you to expedite to your goals. I don't want you to sit there and have to, like, make all the mistakes over and over and over again. I go, if I can get you to a faster route, I'm going to do that without a doubt. Very short answer from you, Chili, before I ask the last question. How is it working? Like, I mean, you're home, you guys have other jobs or is this full-time?
For me, it's full-time. Michelle, go ahead, Michelle.
Okay, so full-time for you, you have another job, you have a husband, you have the house, you have a son. How? Like, how is it for both of you guys? Because a lot of people, a lot of spouses are coming together and they're like, this is a lot. And if something, when you have a bad day at work, you have your buffer. You come home to your spouse or your friends and stuff like that. During a pandemic, you're here. I mean, and mind you, we're out and about. Like, I mean, as the numbers are going lower and lower, I mean, but we are going into year three of the pandemic. How is it to create something, being an innovator with your spouse?
It's hard.
It is
hard, but, and I don't think I could even do it if it were not for the fact that I and we really believe in what this app has the potential to do. And so all the squabbles that we have and, you know, the tireless nights where it's rushing home after, you know, being at the Boys and Girls Club for, you know, 10 hours and then making sure that our son is fed and he's gotten his homework done and tubby and then putting him to sleep. Then it's putting our brains together or it's connecting with our, with our amazing team members in India at the right time because of the time difference to, you know, talk shop and figure out what, you know, what we need to do next. And it's because we know it's like a moral responsibility that we have. And that's what's driving us. And it's so hard. And to your earlier question, it's because I don't know how to answer that question of the why, besides, like, there are so many issues, right? It starts with just the current architecture of families. Like, yeah. we're used to the age of, being a child of immigrants, or, you know, our culture is such that having grandparents being involved in raising children and having extended family together all the time, that is a norm. But that's not the norm. I mean, if we look out into our neighborhood here in Longmeadow, Massachusetts, the driver is you do everything on your own, like your nuclear family, you know, you're siloed, you're isolated, you make trips to grandma and grandpa's house, maybe, you know, once a week if you're lucky.
Yeah.
The workforce, the culture of corporate America has changed. And so it's all about, responding to, the bigger dollars,
Do you think because people are requiring, asking, negotiating, I will work 2 days in the office so I can be 3 days at home, do you think that will make things better? Because people are using this as a bargaining chip now where I want my time back.
Yes. And I hope we continue to go on that trajectory. And the old days of never shall the two sides meet of, home, the home work balance, and that work, the home life doesn't matter. I think we need to reshift that, and value ourselves as individuals and the importance of the family as an institution and how that is a backbone to a healthy economy. Mm-hmm. It gets us to the end goal that we all want, which is a robust, healthy economy. When you have breakdowns at home, because you know, even with two of us as parents, it's hard. It's hard when you don't have other support. I mean, that's a big part of why we moved away from Boston anyways, because our babysitter got engaged and she was our one lifeline in picking up our child from daycare on time, right? It's very tough. And the whole definition of families and raising children right with the, you know, and having the time to do it, the time to have meaningful conversations. I mean, there's all these studies now about the types of conversations that children receive. It's more directive of, you know, whether it's from their teachers at school or their parents at home, it's just more transactional. And
it really is.
That leads into, you know, the corporate, I could go on and on.
Well said.
Days.
Well said.
No, you know what? I mean, I agree. I totally agree on so many different levels. I mean, because, again, as I mentioned, I mean, my grandmother was, not only did my grandmother, she was like my parents' backup, but I took care of my grandma for 21 years before she died at 95. And so everyone, and when I was doing it, I was 22 years old when my parents retired to Florida. And if I just keep an eye on grandma, and I became her caretaker, and everyone's like, why would you? I mean, literally, like, I remember a lot of friends saying, like, why would you do that? I'm like, I didn't at the time know how to answer the question. I'm like, what do you mean? She did it for us. Why would I not do it for her? I mean, in my mind, it was just like automatic. And everyone's like, well, why don't you just put her in a home? I'm like, we don't do that. Like, it's just not something that we do. Put her in a home. I'm like, that's crazy. Or when she was in the hospital, I was always there and I would show up at all different times. I mean, I was working in radio, I was working in TV, I was working for the governor, and I was like back and forth taking care of literally she was aging to 95 years old. And everyone's like, when do you have time for yourself? I go, you make time. Like, can you figure it out? I go, and I bitched, I complained. I mean, it was just like insane how much I was doing, but you just got it done. And when she died, I literally didn't know. I remember going to a supermarket and I didn't know how to food shop for myself because I was like, I've always done it for multiple people. It was just weird. So we've just always done it. So I do appreciate that you said it. I appreciate what you guys are doing. I appreciate the fact that you're taking the risk of working as spouses, putting your all into this, because the whole entire concept of mental care is definitely, it's needed, but also just knowing that you could sit there and amplify the need to help others is awesome. It's just awesome. And you guys, from your stories, you guys have been saying it all along, how you've been out there helping without even realizing it. I mean, truly your work, but I mean, like, literally Danny, like, even like with the, hey, like, hi, there's a kid that needs help. I go, there's a coach. I mean, your entire lives has been this one path that the universe has designed for you. You found each other, you're doing it together, and you're like continuing the chain. And so I don't know if you realize it as much, but I want you to hear that you guys are doing a phenomenal job. And I love that you're adding to it. I love that you're finding more ways to get to more people. So bravo, bravo, and bravo. So with all that being said, I have one last question. It's my last question before we go. And again, I thank you so very much for taking time out of your day. But I end all interviews the same way with everyone, no matter how many times I have you on, because I'm definitely going to have you guys back on, because talking about the humans, our beautiful humans that really just need help and support. We need to have more conversations about this. So this is not the last one, but the question is, if you had a personal ask and a professional ask of anyone that's listening to you right now, what would be your professional ask and what would be your personal ask? As small businesses, we ask for our businesses all the time, but we don't ask for ourselves. So two answers from each of you, please.
Mine is simple. My simple ask is for people to join us in being a part of the change. And there are many businesses.
I'm sorry, Julie, talk a little bit louder because you were going down low. So say, can you repeat that?
Absolutely. My ask is simple, and it's to any individual and business out there, be a part of the change. There are way too many businesses that have the ability to be a part of the solution to join us.
Is that your personal or your professional?
It's both.
No, you can't have it. You have to have two. No, stop cheating.
So pick which one that would be, professional or personal.
That would be the professional then.
Okay.
to help the app. Then my personal would be for individuals to continue to believe.
I love that one.
Okay, yeah. So I'll start professionally. Just to know, so our business model is a simple one. I've had a lot of people talking to me about marketing strategies and different kinds of exterior things we can do. And I've learned that every time that we start to get caught up in that, I have my instincts and my heart tell me to go back to the product itself. To really engage the product, and it's not exactly where we need it to be yet. We want to get it to a point where it meets our goals, and we're fighting every day to get there. And we, like I mentioned earlier, our goals are different from a traditional point of view when it comes to business. They're not as monetary as a lot of our motives are not money. We understand the importance of money and as far as support and creation. But so that being said, we are starting a crowdfunding effort. It will be going out next week. It'll be on Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. And the incentive for anybody that does want to invest in Speakeasy is we will be having a celebration this summer in a very relevant place, which is Cambridge, which is where I taught and coached for years. And we also know that it's the new epicenter of tech companies and consciousness. So we are gonna raise some funds that way. And what we're gonna do is it's gonna continue to let us continue to create the product and test the product and put the hours and time into it in order to get it to the place where people feel the way we want them to feel going on. So my ask is, if you cannot monetarily contribute, then download the app and be patient, because we do understand that we're not exactly where we want to be, but go on the app, form a group, get frustrated. And we are currently, our team is putting a new feature to the app, which is a rating feature. So people can give feedback on how to improve the app. And we can together, not just me and Chili and our team in India and our team in America, but everybody can contribute to what this looks like, what this feels like. And so that'd be my professional ask. My personal ask is this. As the CEO of this company, I often try to see around corners, see problems before they arise, see opportunities before they arise. And, what I see is being our next challenge is we're so blessed to have these networks, to have people in our lives. And the reality is, and it's sad, is that there's people who have nobody. And if you know somebody like that, you suspect they're really lonely and hopeless and just in a bad spot, reach out to them, be kind to them, buy them a cup of coffee, give them $5. These are probably bad examples, but in some way connect with that person. Maybe compliment them on something that's going on. And on the other end, I think that we make the assumption sometimes, with that assumption that everybody has somebody, right? There's also the other end of it. And I think that they, a lot of people can relate to this, the strong friend, you know, the strong person in your family, where are they getting support from? You know, they're holding up all types of people, you know, they professionally in their personal life, and they never ask for anything. Those people are probably going through a lot of the things that everybody's going through. You know, reach out to that strong friend. So that would be my personal ask. Regardless of where you are in life or what you do, find that person that you feel on both ends of the spectrum and connect with them and show them some love and pay it forward a little bit. And then go count your blessings, because, you know, just the ability to have any network of people that care about you, you're rich, you know, regardless of the money you have. So that's my professional ask, my personal ask. Thank you.
Look at that. See, all right, so this is the best part, because I had asked Chili a while ago and she's like, okay. She waited a bit longer. And I'm like, dude, I go, I asked, I want you on. I know you guys are creating magic. And this was wonderful. Thank you for, I mean, just, this was wonderful. And the best part is, I know Chili, but I don't know Chili. I've had relatives on who are like, I didn't know that. So I love that I'm getting to re-know my friends and just like hear stories that I would have never heard of. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your tears. Thank you for your laughter. Thank you for the stories. Thank you for just showing people the possibility of growing something. But something that's being grown is because of something that you, like the seeds that were planted in the past. So thanks for taking the time, guys.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you for the opportunity, Jody.
Oh my God. Again, until next time. And we are going to go out for drinks or dinner or appetizer or a walk, whatever you want to do. But we need to make plans, because I haven't been to Longfellow area in forever.
Anytime.
Open invitation.
Well, I was going to say, the last time I was there, because I went to the Big E. So I went to the Big E and I drove past it. The Big E is really cool. Yeah. The Big E is really cool during the week when nobody's there.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
No, it's a great event.
It's a great event. And I got to look, and I gravitate towards small businesses, and I was talking to farmers. And when there's a lot of people, you don't get to talk to them and they feel like they're like in a fishbowl. If you're going to go to the Big E, go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, literally the second it opens, and leave by 3 o'clock is when the kids get out of school. You have the entire fair to yourself. You can talk to the farmers. They want to be spoken to. They're small businesses too.
Yeah, definitely.
You're the best.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.